to use them to turn this one.
The chair calls the Education Finance Committee to order for Tuesday, March 10th, 2026. Welcome, everyone. And the committee legislative assistant, we have a quorum present. We do have a quorum present. And with that, members, anybody had a chance to read the minutes? I don't necessarily want to call anybody, but any volunteers? All righty. Representative Lawrence, have you had a chance to read the minutes? I gave you a chance.
Mr. Chair, yes. Chair Creasa, I move to approve the minutes.
And Representative Lawrence moves to approve the minutes. All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed, minutes are approved. Members, before we proceed to our first, so I'll just set the stage a little bit. We're going to do a presentation. Then we'll bring the bill author up. We have two bills on the agenda. We'll start with House File 3490, a couple authors' amendments, some discussions, and then we'll go into discussions. And so with that, I think we have Ms. Get this right, Ann Lesser, Ms. Lesser, who's testifying remotely, and she's here to talk about, she's from Invest Education Organization, and here to talk about scholarship granting organizations. So Ms. Lesser, can you hear us?
Yes. Can you hear me?
We can hear you. Ms. Lesser, if you're able to hear us, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed. And we're going to try to get video up on for just 1 minute. If not, we can go right to the auto. There we are. Hello. Welcome to the committee.
Hello. Oh, you were there. Thank you. My name is Ann Lesser, and thank you for having me today. Good afternoon, Co-Chair Creasa, Co-Chair Youakim, and distinguished members of the committee. My name is Ann Lesser, and I'm the President and CEO of Invest in Education Foundation, a nonpartisan 501c3 organization. At Invest in Education, we believe that financial limitations in a child's zip code should not stand in the way of a high-quality education. Our efforts are currently centered on implementing the historic federal tax credit scholarship program, which represents a significant step forward in expanding educational opportunity. Already, 27 states have opted into this program, and we hope that Minnesota will be next. This program provides a new pathway to educational access for students in all educational settings across the country and will generate millions of new dollars in private funding for K-12 education that will provide families with more options and resources to meet their children's needs. This law, which goes into effect on January 1st, 2027, will enable individual taxpayers to claim a 100% federal tax credit up to $1,700 annually for donations made to nonprofit scholarship-granting organizations, or SGOs. These SGOs then provide direct scholarships to eligible students. The eligible uses of scholarships provide flexible academic and enrichment support, such as tutoring, special needs services, extended day programs, tuition, and other expenses listed in the Federal Coverdell Education Savings Account Program. These scholarships are available to families earning up to 300% of regional median income, reaching approximately 90% of households. This program presents an opportunity to expand K-12 educational options and services to children in public, private, and religious schools. A unique statutory component of this law is the requirement that states opt into the program. This provision, known as the opt-in provision, provides the governor or designated individual based on state law with the decision of whether the state can participate in the program, enabling the children in that state to benefit. We are urging all states to opt into the program so that K-12 students in all settings can have access to more resources. Let's talk about why Minnesota should opt in. First and foremost, there is no cost to the state or school budgets. This funding is all private donations that go directly from a taxpayer to the SGO. The uses of scholarships are broad, and students in all school settings are eligible for these scholarships. If you think about this opportunity, every school district in the state of Minnesota could have an SGO where they could raise new money for students in that district's public schools to pay for tutoring, transportation, education technology and software, and more. This is essentially another revenue stream for public education without raising taxes or increasing appropriations. An analysis by our partners at Education Reform Now estimates there are about 1 million taxpayers in the state of Minnesota with a federal individual income tax liability of at least $1,700. If just 30% of those taxpayers contribute the maximum to an SGO in Minnesota, that is nearly $500 million that could go towards K through 12 scholarships. Let's talk about if a state declines to participate. As this is a federal tax credit, any taxpayer in this country with a federal tax liability can make a donation to an SGO regardless of whether the state elects to participate. If Minnesota does not opt in, those 1 million state resident taxpayers can still donate and receive a tax credit, but they will be sending nearly $500 million to an SGO in a state that has elected to participate, supporting K through 12 students in states other than Minnesota. States were able to opt in starting January 1st, 2026. As I previously mentioned, there are 27 states that have elected to participate in this program. The most recent state to opt in is Colorado, with Democrat Governor Jared Polis opting in late January. States must elect to participate on or before January 1st, 2027, in order for students in the state to benefit next year. However, SGOs, families, and schools need more time to prepare and plan accordingly. I would strongly encourage Governor Walz and the Minnesota Legislature to look at the immense benefits this program will provide to K through 12 families and consider opting in sooner rather than later. This tax credit scholarship program will financially empower families, open a new funding stream for public school students, and give parents more options for their children. We hope to be a resource and answer any questions that you may have. Thank you for your time today and for the opportunity to share more about this important program.
And thank you, Ms. Lesser, for the testimony. Members, I can take one or two clarifying questions. Before I do that, I want to introduce Mr. Williams, who's here from the tax folks. He's education for the day, so welcome. Any clarifying questions? Otherwise, we can ask Ms. Lesser to stay around. Okay, seeing none. So with that, Representative Myers, let's bring you up to the testifier stand. And members, let's just state the obvious. We have a bill in front of us that I believe has opinions on both sides. I've long learned this place is about resolving conflict and disagreements, but it's also a space for compromise. And so I'm hoping that we can have some of that honest discussion. I know Representative Myers has looked for solutions that actually reach all corners, and so I'm hoping that discussion will be what we have in front of us today. Representative Myers, as I see you unfurling the cords and getting yourself ready, it's not a long night. This is not a long committee. Your battery open. No, I'm kidding. You have two author's amendments. So with that, I will move House File 3490 in front of the committee. And we have an A1 amendment in front of us, an author's amendment. Representative Joaquim, you have a couple comments.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. With the A1 amendment, I do believe in getting the bill in the shape the author would like. So I would tell our members to vote yes.
Thank you, Representative Chair Joaquim. And with that, members, all those in favor of the A1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? And with that, the A1 amendment is carried. And Representative Myers, you have a second one, the A4. Same thing, author's amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like. Representative, or Chair Joaquim, excuse me.
Yes, Mr. Chair, maybe we should have had the author describe the amendment a little bit. This one seems like it would add a fiscal note to it, so maybe walk through that.
Certainly can do that. Representative Myers, to your A4 amendment, and then if you want, you can call on, we have nonpartisan staff.
Sure. Thank you, Chair Kreisha, Chair Joaquim, members, Education Committee. On the A4 amendment, this is just allowing the Department of Education to establish a scholarship. I just really wanted to spell it out. It was in the original bill, but I just really wanted to spell it out in this amendment. As far as a fiscal note, I guess I would have to rely on staff for that.
Chair Joaquim?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, we want to get the bill in the shape you'd like. I do have grave concerns about this. It feels like window dressing, since it's the only way public schools could access this. According to the guidance, you have to provide up to 10 students from different schools, so there's some murkiness there. But if this is what the author would like, we'll put this bill in the shape you'd like for discussion.
Very good. Thank you, Chair Joaquim. All those in favor of the putting the bill in the author's intended shape with the A4, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Representative Myers, the bill is in the shape that you would like. And just, Chair Joaquim, did you have any quick questions or we can go? Okay, with that, so Representative Meyer, the bill is in the shape that you would like. It's in front of the committee. You are ready to go to your bill.
Thank you, chairs. Thank you, members. You know, supporting our schools is something that's near and dear to me. And I think this committee and members here have seen some of the legislation that I have carried to support those schools. You know, my growing up, my mom was a teacher. My sister's a current public school teacher, and as well as my kids attend, you know, a public school in Hennepin County where I go, where I live. And, you know, over the past 3 years down here, you know, we've made some decisions that have put some impact on our schools, and it's led to some hard choices. And those choices have reduced staff, they've reduced resources within our local schools. And I'm always trying to find ways to, you know, bring innovative ideas to supporting our schools. I've carried bills for LOR, reprioritized funding back into our schools, increased cross-subsidy, and several other. But what I'm bringing forward today, and I think, you know, the previous presentation was very helpful. I mean, I don't have to, I think, reiterate a lot of this stuff. But this bill to me is about, you know, do we want Minnesota money to benefit Minnesota students, Minnesota educators, and Minnesota students? And that's what I'm trying to bring forward. This is all about options and opportunities. Minnesota opts into this. There is a lot of funding that could go to our local schools across the entire state. I know in my district, there's a lot of pride in our local schools, and parents want to step up and step forward and support them. And this is just another way to do that.
Thank you, Representative Myers. Is that the end of your testimony?
I mean, I
you don't have to keep going.
There'll be enough questions. I think they'll probably be there.
Thank you, Representative Myers. And with that, members, we do have a series of testifiers before we go into member questions. I'll call up Kelly Gibbons, Ms. Gibbons from SEIU, and Sarah Barron, Ms. Barron's. If you would come up and prepare your testimony. And then it'll be Jennifer Lipsky, Mr. Uni from MDE, and then I have Mr. Austin from AIM Higher Education. All right. Ms. Gibbons, if you would please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Hi, I'm Kelly Gibbons. I'm with SEIU Local 284. Did you want me to spell that? I didn't hear you very well.
You're good.
Okay. Chair and members, my name is Kelly Gibbons. I'm the executive director of SEIU Local 284. We represent more than 10,000 school workers, including paraeducators, food service workers, custodians, bus drivers throughout the state. Our union is working for the future of the students in every Minnesota school, and we need them to succeed. I got my start in the union transporting our most precious cargo. I drove a school bus for 18 years and was a lunchroom supervisor. So I've worked with many, many children throughout my career. My mother also was a school bus driver. And when I started in West St. Paul, you couldn't barely get a job in the transportation industry. Somebody had to die in order to get a job there because they were such sought after positions. That has really changed. The demand for the work, the low pay, the low hours, the benefits, it's really hard to fill those positions. I hear stories all the time, and you can even read them on social media, where parents don't have transportation for their kids. They're trying to figure out how to get their kids to school, and schools are struggling. I can tell you that there's not enough money coming into schools, and we need to do better. So we have, I hear paras all the time talking about IEPs not being fulfilled, and students with disabilities not getting what they need. Sometimes it's 5 to 10 children per paraprofessional. It's not acceptable. Private schools routinely deny kids based on disability, sexual orientation, gender identity, religion, academic ability, and immigration status. I am proud that public schools accept and support all students, especially kids who need the extra support. Minnesota needs to meet the obligation to our students and the adults who care for them. We need to raise the wages and benefits to attract the best people to support our kids, especially now when children are facing more and more challenges. Vouchers would starve our public schools, harming all students, and especially those who need our support the most. I urge you instead to make real investment in our schools and our staff so that every kid has the support that they need to grow and learn and thrive. Thank you for listening to me today.
And thank you for your testimony, Ms. Gibbons. Ms. Barron, if you would state your name for the record and please
bring
your testimony.
Yes, my name is Sarah Barron, and I'm a high school math teacher at Minnetonka Public Schools. This is my 23rd year of teaching. I'm here to share my perspective of how House File 3490 would be detrimental to Minnesota. First, I want to be clear about why public schools are important. I'm fiscally conservative. I don't want to spend a lot of tax dollars on social services, but I highly value an educated populace and believe it combats poverty and crime and is essential to achieving a successful democracy. Everyone, including the lower and working class, need a high-quality education. I don't want to give them a fish. I want to teach them to fish. I'd rather educate our students to be productive adult members of our society than pay for it later. This is exactly what our public schools do every day, and we can't afford to underfund them any more than they already are, which is exactly what this bill would do. This bill would weaken public schools in three main ways. First, tax credits given for donated money to private schools leaves less in the state tax revenue pool to fund public education. Second, if this bill went into effect, donations to private schools would decrease tuition, making private school more affordable to more middle-class families, decreasing enrollment at public schools, further defunding them. Third, even though people can choose where to donate funds, since there would be a potential decrease in tuition if donated to a private school and no direct personal benefit to donate to public school, I predict that more of these donations would be toward private schools rather than public. Let's be clear. This bill would not benefit public schools. So we have to decide. Do we want public schools to just be for the lower and working class? Do we want the best teachers, newest technology, and small class sizes to serve only students from upper-class families in private schools? If we continue to defund public education and use tax dollars to help only the top percent, we are increasing the gap between the haves and the have-nots and further contributing to problems related to poverty in our society. For these reasons, I urge members to vote no on House File 3490.
And thank you very much, and thank you for your service as a math teacher. Ms. Lipsky, and then to Mr. Mooney.
Hi.
Yep. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony. Okay. Welcome to the committee.
My name is Jennifer Lipsky, and I have been an elementary teacher in the Minnetonka Public School District for the past 32 years. I also serve as president of the Minnetonka Teachers Union, and I'm here today to speak in opposition of House File 3490. This bill would allow individuals to donate to nonprofit organizations that provide school scholarships and receive a tax credit in return. While framed as charitable giving, in practice, it functions much like a voucher system. Tax credits reduce state revenue, public dollars that would otherwise support essential services, including our public schools. Tax incentives for education scholarships primarily channel funds towards private schools, benefiting only a small number of students rather than the majority of Minnesota's public school children. Policy should not redirect public resources to private tuition at the expense of the public education system that serves the majority of students. As a teacher in Minnetonka, this proposal is particularly concerning. Some families already consider private education. If the state offers tax-incentivized scholarships, more families may be encouraged to move toward private schools. This affects not only enrollment, but also funding and the long-term stability of public schools. Our schools rely on tax dollars to educate every student, regardless of ability, background, or family income. Policies that divert these funds weaken the very schools that serve all of our children. If our goal is to strengthen education in Minnesota, the best investment we can make is in our public schools, the foundation of education in this state. House File 3490 would weaken that foundation. For these reasons, I urge members to vote no on House File 3490. Thank you.
And thank you, Ms. Lipsky, for the testimony. Mr. Ooney, welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, chairs and committee members. My name is Ooney. I'm the Director of Government Relations for the Minnesota Department of Education. Article 13 of the Minnesota Constitution clearly establishes the state's duty to support public schools. And it specifically states that it is the duty of the legislature to establish a general and uniform system of public schools. The legislature shall make such provisions by taxation or otherwise as will secure a thorough and efficient system of public schools throughout the state. Minnesota values all students and has a very strong school choice structure, but the state should not be supporting programs that incentivize enrollment outside of public schools, which are one of the core responsibilities of the state. Student enrollment is the bedrock of funding for our schools. Increasing enrollment outside of the public system will erode needed funding for our public schools. Public schools exist to serve students in all communities across the state. They serve all students, no matter who they are or their ability, providing a critical service and right for Minnesota children. There is no similar expectation that private schools be actively accessible to all students across the state. This federal voucher program would divert federal funds toward a program that is not required to serve all parts of the state or serve all students, no matter their race, ability, or zip code. And while students who continue to attend public school could benefit from some of these vouchers, it is unclear whether public school students could benefit from the vouchers based on the current guidelines. Let's be clear. This program is, at its core, about incentivizing enrollment in non-public schools. Again, the state's constitution's mandate is to support a general, uniform, thorough, and efficient public education school system. This proposal runs counter to that mission. And for this reason, the administration will not be opting into the federal voucher program, and the legislature should decline to do so as well. Thank you for the opportunity to provide comments.
And thank you. And Mr. Ooney, just clarify, so your comments, this administration, is that the governor's official position? Is that coming down through you, or is that the Department of Education?
Correct. That is the administration's position,
okay,
Mr.
So,
Chair.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony. And with that, we have Mr. Austin, Ricky Austin from the AIM Higher Education Foundation.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Ricky Austin, and I serve as president of the AIM Higher Foundation, a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization dedicated to ensuring Catholic education is accessible to all children regardless of background. Our organization provides need-based scholarships to 2,900 K-8 students across the Twin Cities metro area, and I'm here in support of HF 3490, which opts Minnesota into the federal scholarship tax credit program. I want to first thank Representative Myers and all of the bill authors for recognizing the importance of this legislation and expanding educational opportunities for children from all backgrounds, and importantly, children across all education settings, public, private, and charter in Minnesota. As you know, this program leverages federal tax policy to encourage and incentivize charitable giving to any scholarship-granting organization. Students are then awarded a scholarship based on demonstrated need. For some families, funds may help cover private school tuition. For others, and I would argue most, the funds will be used for tutoring, transportation, academic enrichment, and services for students with disabilities. The possibilities are endless to create additional revenue for some of the most effective education interventions our peers in the nonprofit and public school sector currently employ to help students succeed. At the AIM Higher Foundation, we do one thing. We provide scholarships to families with financial need, and we see every day how greater access to rigorous academics and high expectations environments can change a child's trajectory, especially for those whose families struggle to put food on the table and keep the same roof over their head each night. 65% of our scholarship recipients are students of color, 61% qualify for free and reduced lunch, and 26% live below the federal poverty line. The average household income for a family of four receiving our scholarships is approximately $38,000 a year. Like many SGOs, we are funded primarily by private philanthropy, and each year we receive more scholarship applications than we are able to award. In fact, we received 7,000 applications for the current school year, and we're currently only able to fund about 40% of them. We need more funding to serve families seeking our help, and a federal scholarship tax credit would encourage additional charitable giving from Minnesotans, allowing organizations like ours to meet more of the needs of more students, all without drawing from the state budget or diverting funds from other sources, and at a time when Minnesota state budgets might otherwise be strained. And as a reminder, as Ms. Lesser said, if Minnesota does not opt in, Minnesotans would still be able to claim the federal tax credit just by donating to organizations in other states, causing our students across the Twin Cities, across Minnesota, to miss out on their generosity. This is an HF 3490 is an opportunity to keep those dollars here at home, to give children in public and private schools the resources and opportunities they need to thrive. Thank you for your time and consideration.
And Mr. Austin, before you step away from the testimony, so is it your testimony that these dollars would be used or could potentially be used for students with disabilities in Minnesota?
Yes.
And facing the looming $250 million cuts into special education, is it your testimony that this could be helpful to alleviating that problem?
Yes.
Thank you very much. And with that, members, I want to thank the testifiers, and we will note for the members that there is written testimony in your folders. And so with that, members, like to do member questions and comments. So Representative Bennett, you're the first one on the list.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I have a comment, but first I'd like to ask a question of Mr. Williams, if I could.
I'm sorry, Representative Bennett. Yes. Let me check. Did we have any public testimony that was not on the list? Okay. Nobody signed up, so how many do we have?
No.
I have one.
You have how many?
I was going to testify, but I did not sign up.
Okay, so let's do this. I'm going to take a member question. Why don't you sign up with the page real quick so I can call you up for testimony? Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So a question from Mr. Williams. Could you just explain the tax impact on the state of Minnesota for this opt-in tax credit?
I'm sorry. Say your question again.
Oh, it's okay. Wondering what the tax impact is for our state for this particular opt-in.
And did you want to direct that to Mr. Williams?
To Mr. Williams, please, yeah. And then I have a comment after.
Very good.
Chair Krisha and Representative Bennett. So I think that the bill has two sections. It's maybe helpful to take them sort of section by section. Section one of the bill would opt Minnesota into this program sort of under the federal OBA law. That provision would not have a direct effect on state revenues. It would simply allow Minnesota-based scholarship granting organizations to be eligible to sort of the contributions to Minnesota-based scholarship granting organizations to qualify for the federal tax credit. So there wouldn't be any effect on state revenues from that provision. Section 2 of the bill is effectively a tax conformity provision, and so Section 2 sort of has two effects for the state tax system. The first is that the federal OBA law includes what's called the denial of double benefit provision that essentially says if you make a donation to a scholarship granting organization and get a 100% tax credit, you're not allowed to take a charitable contribution deduction for that same donation. And so if Minnesota implemented Section 2 of the bill, we would adopt that federal treatment, which would disallow those charitable contribution deductions for state purposes, and the Department of Revenue has estimated that would raise revenues for the state. The second effect of Section 2 is that it would make the scholarships non-taxable to the students and families that receive them, and that provision would have a small revenue reduction, and the Department of Revenue's estimate is the sort of net effect of those two things would be a revenue increase.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Thank you for that. So in the end...
Representative Bennett, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In the end, we would actually have a revenue increase to our state by opting into this program. And I just want to, first of all, thank you, Representative Myers, for bringing this bill forward. As I have studied it, and I've studied it in depth, because I hear people saying, oh, it's going to take away from public schools and this and that. And my mind is just blowing up, because as you look at this, I heard the gentleman before testifying saying the possibilities are endless. We have endless possibilities with this tax credit. It's going to be taken by Minnesotans whether we opt in or not. If we opt in, we allow SGOs to qualify for this in our state, and our public schools can make their own SGOs. I have kids come knocking at my door every spring from the local elementary schools, raising money for our schools, for extracurricular things, things that the school just doesn't have budget for. Why not let the schools have their own SGO and let parents know, hey, you can donate this. You can get a tax credit. They don't even have to give the whole, was it $1,700? They can give a portion and get a tax credit for it. And it goes to our local schools to help with things like transportation for extracurricular. I'm not sure what all those different, you know, when they door knock and sell those little cards and everything go for. But that's what this is. It benefits our public schools. Yes, non-public schools are on this too. So there's going to be a little competition for these SGOs. But the majority of our kids in Minnesota go to public schools. Why wouldn't the parents say, I'm going to give to in my local community? We have four elementary schools. They could, from my understanding, form an SGO for those elementary schools. Our local parents would give to that. They're going to do that. Let that money stay here and take advantage of it. There is so much misinformation about this. Like I said, my head's blowing up over the misinformation of the testimony that I heard. People need to delve into this better. This will advantage our public schools and our students who go there for tutoring, for paying for low-income families to be take part in extracurricular activities, for so much. Let's go for it, people. We need to do this for our kids. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. And members, your indulgence from this is a public committee, and so I want to make sure I'm going to give 10 minutes for public testimony. Representative Youakim, you have a clarifying question on the tax. So if you would start marshaling people up according to the list, and I'll get the public testimony out of the way. Chair Youakim.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Williams. And I want to thank you for coming in today to explain this to us. And you and I have had conversations before, too. When it comes to the cost at the federal level, and I ask this because they have not provided their fair share of special education costs. They've never paid more than 17% when they owe us 40. So what would the cost at the federal level be for this tax conformity? I've seen some pretty big numbers.
Mr. Williams.
Chair Youakim and Chair Carisha, I don't have a number immediately in front of me. You know, the tax credit would mean that if Minnesota opted in, the contribution would sort of be a dollar for dollar reduction in tax liability. So the amount contributed to these scholarship granting organizations would be the amount of the federal reduction. I think that one problem with sort of coming up with a nationwide cost estimate for this, it sort of depends on which states participate and which states don't. So we don't know exactly how many states will be around to participate in this and how many credits will be given out. I could look and see. I think the Joint Committee on Taxation probably, when they pass the federal bill, produced an estimate on what this provision would cost federal revenues, and I could follow up with that number for you.
Chair Youakim, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. That would be helpful because the number I had seen was upwards of $2 billion, which could go a long way to help our kids in special education. And just a reminder, too, the guidance that I had seen does not allow a school district themselves to do it because it has to be more than 10 students. It has to be at least 10 students for an SGO, and it has to be more than one school. So it would be hard for an individual school to do this on their own and utilize this tax credit. I think that's why you probably had your A4. Thank you.
And with that, let's go to public testimony. Please state your name for the record, and then go ahead and begin your testimony.
Good afternoon, Chair Kresha, members of the committee. My name is Katrin Wigfall, and I am an education policy fellow at American Experiment. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 3490, which opts Minnesota into a new federal education tax credit, which operates very differently than voucher policy. This tax credit enables scholarship-granting organizations, SGOs, to provide scholarships that expand K-12 students' access to educational services. Notably, most of the students who would benefit from these scholarships are public school students who could use the funds for supplemental services such as tutoring, specialized therapies, test preparation courses, or exam fees. As a former public school teacher, I'm encouraged by the potential here to close learning gaps, reduce disparities in out-of-school enrichment spending, and expand academic support without reducing public education funding. The possible financial impact is substantial. Estimates from the Education Reform Network suggest that if just 30% of Minnesota tax filers eligible for the full tax credit donated to an SGO, more than $487 million could be available for scholarships, all from rerouted federal income tax dollars. To put those dollars in perspective, that amount exceeds the $403 million spent statewide on K-12 student activities and athletics during fiscal year 2025. It is also more than double what was spent statewide on career and technical instruction that same year. Minnesotans support opting into this opportunity. I have before me 4,617 signatures from across the state urging participation, including at least one signature from every Senate district and one signature from all but eight House districts. If Minnesota declines to participate, our students lose access to these scholarships, while hundreds of millions in potential donations from Minnesota taxpayers flow to states that opt in. Those dollars should remain here in Minnesota, supporting our students, our teachers, our schools, and our communities. Minnesota has an opportunity to bring substantial new educational support to students statewide without increasing state spending or redirecting any dollars away from our public schools. It is an opportunity Minnesota should not allow to pass by. I respectfully urge you to support House File 3490. Thank you for your consideration.
And please state your name again. Did I hear it right?
Katrin Wigfall.
Wigfall. And Ms. Wigfall, please accept my apology. I missed the request to testify, so that was on me. So
No problem. Thank you
very much for your testimony. Go ahead. To the testifier, state your name and begin your testimony.
Good afternoon, Chair Krisha, Chair Joachim, and members of the committee. My name is Dan Beckery. I serve as the head of school at Southwest Christian High School in Chaska.
And I'm sorry, if I could get your last name again.
Beckery.
Okay.
I'm also the Minnesota State Representative for the Association of Christian Schools International. There are 33 ACSI schools here in Minnesota serving over 8,000 students and their families. I'm here today to encourage Minnesota to opt into the Federal Tax Credit Scholarship Program. This federal program, as you've already heard, is entirely funded through voluntary donations made to SGOs, meaning there is no cost to our state's budget. By opting in, Minnesota will empower hardworking families with students in Minnesota's public and non-public schools. Public school families can use these funds for tutoring, after-school enrichment programs, and services for students with special needs. The program will also empower Minnesota's low and middle income families to choose a non-public school environment if the parents believe this is best for their child. Again, with no impact to our state's budget. The biggest challenge facing Minnesota's private schools is ensuring that families of all incomes, all Minnesota families, can access the education we provide. At my school, 30% of our families rely on financial need or aid to help their families afford tuition. There are many Minnesota private schools serving communities where as much as 80% of their families rely on financial assistance to enroll their students in the school. Consider one of our families, a single income household caring for a disabled parent making less than $50,000 a year. For families like this, tuition scholarships are the only way they can experience the freedom of choosing where their child is educated. Now we have an opportunity in front of us to support Minnesota families who are struggling with the rising cost of living and want better educational opportunities for their children. By simply opting into this federal program, our state could provide a vital bridge connecting families to the resources and educational environments they believe are best, again, for their children. Minnesota taxpayers will be able to claim this federal tax credit whether we opt in or not. If we decline to participate, Minnesotans are going to direct their contributions to SGOs in other states. Why would we choose to allow funds contributed by Minnesotans to benefit families in states like Iowa and South Dakota rather than being used to assist the students and families right here in our state? I respectfully call upon Minnesota's elected leaders from both parties to urge the governor to opt in. Let's not forfeit this chance. Let's not forfeit the chance to enhance educational achievement in our state and provide vital resources to the students attending, again, both our public and non-public schools. I appreciate the committee and your commitment to the well-being of all Minnesota students and families. Thank you.
And thank you for your testimony. And with that, I believe that concludes the public testimony and testifiers. Mr. McGrath, I'm sorry.
Chair Joachim, my name is Lee McGrath. For today's purposes, I'm a federal taxpayer. I come before you in favor of House File 3490. Quite simply, I hope to make a contribution and receive a full credit of $1,700 by contributing to the Edina Public School Foundation. I trust that the people in Edina can team with the people in St. Louis Park to meet the requirements and establish a scholarship granting organization to which I want to contribute. If not, I will give my $1,700 to St. Francis of Assisi Catholic School in West Des Moines. I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Mr. McGrath, for your testimony. And with that, members, I believe that concludes the public testimony. Thank you for your indulgence in that. So, members, let's move over to member discussion. And I have a couple people on the list. Representative Lee.
Thank you, Chair. So I have a question and then a follow-up. Question for the author, just to clarify some of the testimony. It's my understanding that scholarships can be used for tuition at private schools, but just wanted to clarify whether students who choose to go to public schools can use scholarships for tuition there.
Representative Myers.
I would have to go back and look at the list of what that can be used for. But there's a long, lengthy list in there of what they can use. I guess I'd have to double check on that.
And if you want, I'm sorry, Representative, could you state the question? I didn't hear it very well. And you can always call on Mr. Strom if you'd like. But go ahead, Representative Lee.
Yeah. So the question was, scholarships can be used for tuition at private schools, but can they be used for tuition at public schools?
And just so I are you asking specifically for tuition or for other things? I just want to clarify your question, Representative.
Yeah. Specifically for tuition.
Okay, so if I understand your question, not to editorialize, the question is, can scholarships be used for tuition for public schools? Is that correct?
Yes, just like private schools.
Very good. Representative Myers?
Yeah, I would have to check with research on that based on what the federal laundry list is.
Very good. Mr. Strom, do public schools have tuition?
Mr. Chair, Representative Myers, the state of Minnesota requires that the public schools not charge tuition for the programs necessary for graduation. So I think it may get to a bit of what people are defining as tuition, but for what one commonly thinks of as the school day in the public school, a charge for tuition by the school district to a student would not be allowed. The other things on the list that were suggested, including the fees for things like pupil transportation and extracurriculars, and depending on how tutoring are structured, there aren't limitations. There's a public school fee law in Minnesota that allows many of those types of fees. But tuition itself, in its commonly understood form, would not be allowable charge by a school district to a student.
Very good. Representative Lee, you have the floor.
Great. Thank you, Chair. So the answer is no, right? So I want to make it very clear that, as we talk about where this money can be used, this money cannot be used for students who choose to go to public schools. And I think that's a really important point. As we go back to the conversation about the revenue impacts of this bill, as noted earlier, there is no revenue note and there's no fiscal note for the A4, which we adopted. And that's a really important conversation. So it is true, as folks have mentioned, that we would be opting into federal legislation. So, the net impact is, very likely, right, that there would be a bump in revenue because of this no double dipping rule. But when we step back, right, I'd like to remind the committee that the enacting legislation that you know, brought about the scholarship program reduces federal revenues by $4.5 trillion and actually would add to the deficit by $3.4 trillion. And so, you know, when we think about who pays taxes, right, Minnesotans pay federal taxes as well, and it's not that, like, this doesn't cost anything. So I want to make that point. And I think there was a question earlier of, you know, how much this program would actually cost. I did do the research, and the problem is this is an uncapped program. So Congress said, yes, you can, taxpayers can be reimbursed 100% of their donations up to $1,700. But because this program is uncapped, the various institutes have been unable to really put a good finger on it. Mr. Williams earlier mentioned the Joint Committee on Taxation. So their estimate is that this scholarship program would cost the federal government $4 billion per year. The Bipartisan Policy Center actually says it could be as high as $26 billion per year. And then the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy, otherwise known as ITEP, placed the projection closer to like $51 billion. So it is a pretty wide gap. I mean, you can go with the $4 billion. But if you, you know, if you pick the $51 billion, right, that actually, like, to me, like, if you use that number, it's pretty easy math. Like, across the country, we have about 50 billion students in K through 12. And so if we took that money and actually reinvested that back in our schools, that would mean $1,000 per pupil to every school district out there. And so I want the superintendents and the school districts to really pay attention and think about that. And that's really important because, you know, at the federal level, right, in March 25, the federal administration decided to shut down the Department of Education and, you know, also decided to move a lot of the funding streams from the department, arguably illegally, to other departments, right? So one really good example, again, of, like, investing in our schools and in, like, a federal formula program that benefits schools, you know, across the state in Eveleth, St. Paul, Mankato, is something called the Title I program. That program only costs $18 billion a year. And when they shut down Department of Ed, that program was moved, arguably again, illegally to the Department of Labor. So this program could be paid, you know, 2.5 times over, right, using the money that, you know, will apparently be used to fund this scholarship program at the federal level. And so I just want folks to, like, understand that federal taxation impact, because, you know, we also pay federal taxes. Thanks.
Thank you. And Representative Lee, a lot of comments in there. Members, I have 11, it'll probably be 12 or 13 on the list. I would ask that we get to questions, we be concise. If we want long conversations, please take those outside around House floor and work with each other. But I'm really asking that we keep concise so that we can keep moving through the bill. We have a bill author in front of us with a bill, and we need to speak to that bill. So with that, Representative Johnson, and then Representative Green.
Thank you, Chair. Just a couple of quick questions. Is there anything in this bill that forces non-public schools to use those scholarship dollars on certain groups of students, i.e. low-income students, students with special education needs, et cetera?
Representative Green. Representative Meyer, excuse me.
Thank you for the question. Yes, I think there's a threshold of where this money would be used for, and that could be used for, you know, tutoring, summer programs.
Representative Johnson, follow up.
Yes, thank you, Chair. So it doesn't necessarily say that it has to go to certain groups of kids. It goes to these granting organizations, and they determine how to disperse it. So what stops private schools from just raising the rates to raise all this money in the scholarship granting organization and then raising their rates to further price out those lower and middle income families?
Representative Meyer?
Thank you for the question. I think at the end of the day, you got to look at, you know, for my district and all of Minnesota, I mean, 90% of the kids go to public schools. If you're looking at a way to provide options and opportunities for our funding, I think we're going to see most of this go to those public schools. What those private schools decide to do, that's up to them. But I know people in my community, including myself, this is a great opportunity to support my local schools.
And very quickly, Representative Meyer, just clarification, is there an income threshold for the students?
I don't believe so.
I think if I can go to Mr. Strum.
300.
Or Mr. Williams, excuse me.
I know.
Chair Kreisha, there's some language in the federal law that requires the scholarship granting organization to provide 90% of the funds received to eligible students. And then there's an income limitation that is 300% of the area median gross income, which is a number calculated by the Department of Housing and Urban Development.
Very good. Thank you. Representative Johnson, back to you.
Thank you, Chair. One more question. One of the testifiers talked about how this would help with public schools and lives in Edina and how he'd be able to give it to the Edina Foundation. How does this do anything to help that equity issue, I mean, that we often hear about in public schools? For example, a community like Edina might have quite a few more people that could fund a program like that than, say, the Red Lake School District. So how does this move us further away from the equity that we're trying to achieve so that no matter what zip code our kids live in, they get the same quality education?
Representative Myers.
Yeah, thank you, Representative. I think, you know, the reason behind the A4 amendment was to help address that, but additionally, this allows multiple school districts to combine together. So if there's a group of Minneapolis schools that want to combine together to support that, they can.
Thank you, Chair. Just one last comment. To me, this feels kind of like you see a GoFundMe when somebody has a medical issue or an injury, where depending on who you know and what story you tell and how much money your friends have, you can fund your care. And it does nothing to address the underlying issues that we see in disproportionate funding in our schools, whether no matter where they are at the state. So I won't be supporting this. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. And we're going to go Representative Green, then Representative Altendorf, and Representative Hudson.
Representative, thank you, Chair. Green. Yeah, thank you so much, Chair. Thank you, Representative Myers. Sorry, I'm going to push Rep. Vernick back so I can see you. So I have a couple comments on the bill. One is you made a comment in your opening statements about, you know, what has happened over the last several years with education funding. We have a long way to go to get ourselves to where we need to be, but I just want to acknowledge that one of the main things that was passed in 23-24 was linking the per pupil formula to inflation, and we have heard across the state from superintendents and school boards how impactful that has been. So I just wanted to get that on the record. The second thing that hasn't been mentioned is the millions of dollars that our current federal government has withheld from the state of Minnesota for education for our students. You know, they withheld $71 million in the spring, and we had to come back and sue them, and they lost in court, and then they had to give some money back. So there is a lot of money that is being, I think, toyed with a bit out in Washington, that is unfair to every single student in the state. So I don't think we can have this conversation without having also that conversation. But my question specifically is, I am very concerned about individuals with disabilities and the IDEA Act and Section 504 in particular. So non-public schools, you know, I heard a lot about we don't discriminate on race, we don't discriminate on income, but I haven't heard a lot from testifiers about ability and disabilities and services. So non-public schools don't have any obligation to provide services for students that would need them. And therefore they could discriminate and not allow them to attend their schools because simply they aren't going to invest, and they choose not to invest then in those services. And I know that from our public schools, because our public schools pay for special education in private schools. Right now, that's what happens. So would this scholarship funding be allowed to go to schools that discriminate against students that can't attend because of their disabilities?
Representative Myers, I'll let you answer that one.
Yeah, thank you for the question. First, let me start out and say, you know, I was really proud of the work that myself, Representative Bakeberg, and several others did 2 years ago on that education funding bill. We actually had a proposal that didn't have the 65 mandates in it and provided more flexible dollars. I don't think we'd be in a position like this, and a position that, you know, we've seen announcements recently with millions and tens of millions of dollars worth of cuts. I think we have to remember what this bill does. This is one tool. You guys have a lot of tools in this committee that you can use to support students. And what I'm asking, like I brought before, is just an option and opportunity. You guys are ultimately gonna decide if this bill goes somewhere. And I think you've heard testifiers, both sides saying in support, you know, concerns about it. But I think at the end of the day, we're in such, we're in such a situation that we've got to look at all options to fund our schools.
Thank you. Representative Green, quick follow-up.
Thank you, Chair. So the answer is no, then. So this would really only go to some schools who can serve some students. That's what I'm hearing. So thank you. No more comments.
And members, again, we're on House File 3490. We're debating the tax credit. I understand the conversations that are around this, but let's keep it to that. And so with that, Representative Altendorf, you have the floor.
Thank you, Chair Krisha. So my question is for nonpartisan Mr. Strom, if he could maybe clarify. But if I understand this correctly, I heard you say that funding could go to special education, tutoring, extracurricular activities, summer education, transportation. Is that correct that these, my kids, five, went to public schools, same public school, Goodhue, and they have an education foundation. They already have like an SGO type organization that would be set up. So are those funds that if I would donate my $1,700 to the Goodhue Education Foundation, then they could choose to pay for those type of things. Is that correct, Mr. Strom?
Mr. Strom.
Mr. Chair, Representative Altendorf, the list of what can be paid for, I think, needs to be framed in context of what is required to be provided by the state for free. So most of those things on the list that the foundation would pay for and supplemental things are certainly the case. With special education, I don't think under Minnesota's current FAPE policies and the fee law that a part of any of the regular instruction necessary for graduation for special education could be paid for. But things certainly like transportation for those transport of children 2 miles and less, extracurricular activities, outside supports of things unrelated to graduation, that would certainly be the case. But I worry a little about the first thing on the list on the special education board.
And Mr. Strom, just quickly, so a dollar can only be spent once. Dollars that would be used by something like this and spent are not dollars that would come out of somewhere else. Is that correct? It's obvious.
Mr. Chair, yes. Each of the foundations that sets up a scholarship granting organization, as long as it complies with the requirements of how those foundations are established, then chooses its mission. And the federal law says that they have to serve more than 10 kids, and it can't be exclusively for one school. But for example, it could be for a geographical grouping of schools or perhaps an ideological or religious grouping of schools that the foundation is established for. So I'm not sure if that's getting at your question or not, but then they could choose, and they could choose more than one mission potentially, but then they would choose for their scholarship recipients essentially, here's the purpose if you apply to us for your scholarship money, here's the purposes for which our foundation is granting the funds.
Very good. Representative Altendorf, follow up.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Krisha. And so, you know, the answer is yes. The answer is yes, that funding is able to go to the foundation of the public school, and then it will be able to go to this program. And I think everyone in this committee, we know how the funding works, that if it's coming out of the general fund, and now this foundation is able to substitute that money into the general fund, then the answer is yes, that this is benefiting our public schools. So on that, Representative Myers, I would like to thank you for being a leader and advocating for your schools. I know you have four children in public schools. I have five children that went through the public school systems, and especially want to bring the attention to everyone in, you know, rural Minnesota. We're very proud of our schools. We're very proud of our public schools. We're very competitive in sports. And as we said earlier, 90% of our students here in Minnesota go to public schools. And this would be a huge benefit, especially to our rural schools who are in dire need for these extra funds. So thank you, Representative Myers.
Thank you, Representative Altendorf. Representative Hudson, then Representative Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am perhaps certainly as frustrated as I've ever been during any bill presentation that I've ever sat in a committee for. The degree of misinformation that's been stated about this bill is absurd to the level that it raises real serious concerns about the people making the claims. This because of who they are and what they do for us. We're talking about people who work in public education, people who we entrust our children to teach them how to discern and think and observe the truth. And we've had outright false statements made by those people in this room. This is not a voucher program. It doesn't look anything like a voucher. This doesn't take money from public schools and give it to private schools. This enables people to take money from the Trump administration, from his federal government, and send it to your schools. One of the examples that we heard, this potentially could cost the federal government $26 billion. Okay. I love the sudden focus on fiscal responsibility at the federal level. If there were a bill making its way through Congress to spend $26 billion on public education, I gotta believe you'd take that in a second. This does that by other means, according to your own math. And the official position of the Walz administration made clear here today is that he would rather see that money with Donald Trump than your local school. I don't appreciate the obfuscation. I don't appreciate the absurd, denigrating insinuations that non-public schools are hateful and trying to discriminate against poor kids and discriminate against kids with special needs. Nothing could be further from the truth. That was implied by the line of questioning, and I have the floor.
Chair Krisha, I don't believe anybody said that. Maybe we can tone down the rhetoric.
Thank you. Representative Hudson.
I am not toning anything down because this matters. Let me tell you who it matters to. It matters to the students in my school district. I've been talking about since I got here, I was sent here by my constituents, about how we have one of the lowest per pupil funding systems in any district in this entire state. St. Michael Albertville could set up one of these SGOs tomorrow, if this bill were law, and could fund, God knows what, the sky's the limit, we heard. Instead of having to come back to the taxpayer again and again and again and ask for more bonding money, more levy money, coming back to us year after year, please, please give us equalization. They could organize it on their own. It would cost this state nothing. It would take money away from the guy you hate the most in D.C. to do other things with, which is what will happen with the money if we don't spend it in our local schools. So what are you doing?
Thank you, Representative Hudson. Members, again, I'm going to let the conversation go, and I'll let you decide which level of rhetoric we're going to choose. Representative Hill, you have the floor. Then Representative Ingen.
Thank you, Chair Krisha. Just a couple of quick questions for Representative Meyer. Sorry.
Out of eye shot there.
The first question has to do with these scholarship granting organizations and wondering if there's any credentialing or eligibility guidelines that these scholarship granting organizations would have to be subject to.
Representative Myers.
Yes, thank you for the question. Nonpartisan staff, but I do know based on the federal guidelines, there are some requirements. The one thing I do know about our public schools is I expect them to be able to do this pretty quick.
And nonpartisan, didn't want to demote you. Mr. Williams.
Chair Krisha, the federal law sets up some rules for what constitutes a scholarship granting organization. So the organization has to be a 501c3 organization. It cannot be a private foundation. Cannot commingle qualified contributions with other amounts and has to maintain separate accounts for the qualified contributions that qualify for the credit. The organization also has to be on the list submitted by the Department of Education under the bill to the federal government. It has to provide scholarships to 10 or more students who do not all attend the same school. It has to spend not less than 90% of its income on scholarships, and it cannot provide scholarships for any expense other than the Coverdell list that was described. And then it has to provide priority to students who are awarded scholarships the previous year or who have siblings that were awarded a scholarship. They can't earmark or set aside contributions on behalf of particular students, and they have to do income verification in accordance with the income limits in the bill.
Representative Hill, back to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Krisha. And another follow-up, Representative Myers. Who would be charged with overseeing any regulatory concerns or who would be in charge of policing inappropriate activities by these scholarship granting organizations should they occur?
Representative Myers.
Yeah, thank you. Again, the groups that are going to inform will have those, and they will have reporting that's required under them.
Yep. Representative Hill, follow up?
No further. Thank you.
Thank you. And just as the bill is written, the amendment, I believe, Mr. Strom, if you want to, but that would be MDE that would have the initial regulatory purview. Is that correct?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, under House File 3490, the Department of Education is being tasked with being responsible for that. So the oversight would fall there. A nonprofit would also be, of course, be subject to the oversight
and they're subject
by
to their
the
rules.
Attorney General.
Very good. Chair Joaquin.
Chair Krusha, thank you. Just to follow up on this, Mr. Strom, I thought I had read in the federal loose guidance, since they haven't done their full guidelines on this, that whoever the state would not be allowed to say to an SGO that they couldn't be one. So even if they were suspecting that the SGO might not be set up properly, MDE would not be allowed to say, no, you can't be one.
Mr. Strom.
Mr. Chair Joaquin, as you mentioned, the true federal rules aren't released yet, and when they do, hopefully they will help clarify some of these issues. In terms of my understanding, the state could not essentially pick and choose amongst other qualified SGOs on the list. So as long as the SGO met the state's definition of meeting those criteria, that they would have to be on the list that if they applied to be submitted. In terms of whether if the state were to essentially perform an auditing function and have a dispute saying we think only 80% of your scholarships went out for students, not 90-some percent, I'm not exactly sure what the resolution process for that would be. But the state's job would be to look at those requirements that Mr. Williams read and essentially say, did the SGO meet those criteria? If they did, then they're put on the list that's submitted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Ingen, then Representative Ram.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Instead of, if I say what Mr. Hudson just said, I'd walk out and storm out as well, but I'm going to choose to laugh through this. The Cirque du Soleil would be impressed with the illogical hoop jumping that's been used to try to justify opposition to this bill. So much for being pro-choice here. Who are we here to represent? Systems and protect them or protect students and their opportunities? We have 27 states that have opted into this. We have a couple of blue states. We have Virginia and Colorado. And if we choose to not do so, we will form an education desert here in Minnesota and watch dollars and students go elsewhere as they have been. I want to address a few of the testifiers that came up in opposition to this because their comments are either misunderstood or a downright lie. We heard from the SEIU executive director that all the time she hears that special ed students are going without IEP assistance or paras. Then why not help form these grants to supplant that rather than just go by the same failed status quo system that we're currently using? I heard Mr. Uni with MDE say that student enrollment is the bedrock for funding. First off, nothing with this bill precludes any student enrollment. It doesn't change that. But I think he's also telling on himself a little bit in saying that this is about dollars and not students. This is about limiting choice rather than expanding it. We're here to prioritize outcomes and choices for kids. And if anybody's standing in the way of that, then you're prioritizing dollars and less choice and a broken system, we're going to oppose that. This seems like an absolute common sense bill, and thank you for bringing it forward.
Thank you, Representative Ingen, for your comments. Representative Ream.
Thank you, Chair Krisha, and thank you, Representative Myers, for bringing this bill forward. It's a really important discussion that we're having. Two of my kids also attended Minnetonka Public Schools. It was an amazing resource. The math teachers at Minnetonka are second to none. One of my kids ended up with basically the equivalent of a math minor when he graduated from Minnetonka. Amazing school. And that is where my concern lies, is that if we use these school vouchers to boost private schools, this is going to impact the quality of our public schools. And I don't think we want to do that. You know, we talk a lot about how we need more money for our public schools. This is the opposite of giving money
to public schools. I'm very concerned about this further increasing the educational gap that we see in Minnesota. As we know, public schools cannot discriminate against students who have a disability or because of their religion or lack of religion. You know, they can't discriminate because of their sexual orientation or their gender identity. And clearly the state constitution says that we cannot be putting public taxpayer dollars into private schools. I have nothing against private schools, but I think our job here is to fund public schools. So I guess my question for you would be, why is this bill better than investing in our public schools like Minnetonka School, so that every student, regardless of their background, can access the same high-quality public education where they feel safe and valued?
Representative Myers.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Rehm. You know, I'll agree with you as well. I mean, you know, my kids that go to Minnetonka love our schools, great teachers. They're not in high school yet, so we haven't had the experience in the high school. But I think what we're missing here is the concept of options and opportunities. And again, you know, we're talking about the bill in front of us. One thing I've learned here at the legislature is there's not just one way to do something. And we get hung up on just one way, one way, one way. I have several different bills, several different options to help fund our schools. This is one of those. I do that because the school you referenced has let 80 educators go. Think of the money with the pride that people have in some of these schools that they could bring into these schools to help alleviate, to get to general fund dollars, to help lower classroom sizes. As a parent of a second grader, that typically we see those classes at 21 kids and now they're at over 30, really tough on the teachers, really tough on the parents. This is another option. There's gonna be other options that come forward. There's options that I'm on a bill with Representative Ray Rauer that, you know, we're trying to do things to help our schools. So I would remind everybody, this is one option and opportunity overall to help education in Minnesota.
Thank you, Representative Myers. Quick follow-up.
Yeah, I guess I still remain concerned that this would go toward private schools, toward parents who are already sending their kids to private schools. I think that's been proven. I'm also concerned about the fraud. There are documented cases where these types of vouchers have been used for extensive fraud schemes in other states, and I would not want to see that here.
Representative Sensor Mira.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Myers, for bringing this bill. I wanted to just quickly start. I think there was a comment about, you know, that maybe we are spending too much time defending systems. And I will just say that if there is a system that I am going to go down defending, it will be public education. And that is because public education is not just about one student. It's not just about me educating my kids or my student. It is about a collective. And public education is our last safety net. Sometimes it feels like our only safety net. It is the one place where no one can be turned away. It is not privatized. It is not convoluted. It is not compartmentalized. We see relatively no fraud within the system because there is huge oversight of how public dollars are spent. And the majority of Minnesotans agree with me. The majority of Minnesotans believe in our public education system and have sent us all here to strengthen that system. That is why 90%, as been mentioned here today, 90% of Minnesota students are in public schools. And I think this conversation, which has talked so much about how these dollars can go to public schools, I just find it a little bit disingenuous because I see this, and this is why I'm against the bill, as part of a bigger Project 2025 dismantling of public education voucher movement that the Republican Party has been endorsing. And now here in this committee, we're hearing from the Minnesota GOP that they don't agree with this, that that's not what this is about, that it's actually about strengthening our public schools. We have a letter here from Minnesota School Boards Association, Minnesota Association of School Administrators, Association of Metropolitan School Districts, Minnesota Association of Business Officials. None of them are supporting this, right? Our leaders in public education are not telling us that this is the way they want to figure out how to not cut 80 teachers at a school or how to invest in special education. So I'm against this bill philosophically. I guess the last thing I want to say is, you know, I'm really concerned about the income kind of requirement and the fact that this could support families who make up to 300% of the area median gross income. You know, it says here that for a student in Minneapolis-St. Paul, that could be an income of about $400,000. I don't believe that a family that is making $400,000 should be able to get tuition support. And, you know, Representative Myers, I know you've brought bills around universal school meals, right, and saying that some of our wealthier families should not pay for those meals. So I don't believe we should be paying for private education for those families, especially when we know that the more people that are opting out of public education, the more that that system is hurting, and that is leading to the devastating cuts that we are all hearing about. So very much against this bill. I think if we are all so supportive as public education as we are hearing through today, there's a lot of other things we could be spending our time talking about.
Representative Myers, do you have any comments?
Yeah, I mean, all I would add to that is, you know, the reason I bring these is because I feel like we're missing some of the innovation. We're missing, again, I keep saying options and opportunities. Like you said, I've brought other bills forward to try to reprioritize funding into education. You know, there were some statements made about a certain party and the way they go. All I can do is talk about the bills I've carried, the bills I'm presenting, what I do to support schools, public or private. And I hope that we can look past some of the politics, and it's happening on both sides, don't get me wrong, down here. But at the end of the day, this is a great opportunity to put the politics aside and invest in Minnesota schools and Minnesota students.
Thank you. Representative Mueller, then Representative Clardy.
Thank you, Chair Krisha, and thank you, Representative Myers, for bringing this bill. As a person who is still in the classroom and have had the privilege of teaching both in public school and in private school, I find it pretty appalling that apparently our public schools are not creative enough to think about how to use this money. I'm looking at the letter that all of our educator leader lobbyists have sent us, and they said these organizations would distribute scholarships that can be used for private school tuition, homeschooling, tutoring, and other education-related services. Are we saying there's no education-related services happening in our public schools? Is that what we're saying? Because if that's what's happening, then yeah, I want my kid to not go to that school if there's no education-related services there. As a person who has had a chance to teach at a private school and at a public school, I know that both desperately need money, both desperately need qualified teachers, both desperately need to have lots of different resources. And the fact that we're segmenting this out, we agree with sending money to have universal school lunches, we agree with sending money to make sure we have textbooks in both places, we agree to have money go to private schools when we're talking about guidance counselors and all those different things, but God forbid we allow our parents to use their own money to send their own children to their own school that they choose. I don't know how I can justify as a legislator to tell another individual how they want to educate their child. I love the testimony that talks about that this was incentivized people to go to private schools. This money can go to any of the schools. And I don't know about you, but I love my public schools. I've worked at several of them, and they are proud and good and amazing. And I want to make sure that they are able to stay continually funded. And as Representative Myers have said, we need to have options and opportunities, and this is just one of them. Thank you, Chair Krisha.
Thank you, Representative Mueller. Representative Clardy, then Representative Reimer.
Thank you, Chair. First of all, thank you for letting us have a hearty discussion.
Your committee.
Because of that, I have like three follow-up questions. What type of protections do you have in this bill regarding fraud? And what kind of mechanisms are you using?
Representative Myers.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Clardy. I think as Nonpartisan said, this is a program that's getting put in place. And, you know, with that in mind, we're that A4 amendment also allowing the Department of Education to help establish something to be part of that. The opportunity right now is about an opt-in. And as we continue to move forward with this, we're going to have to be able to address that.
Representative Clardy. Follow up.
So it sounds like it's in works. And then the, I'm also wondering what kind of data you're collecting as far as like who will be getting it and how it was actually used.
Representative Myers.
So thank you, Representative Clardy. Yes, this bill specifically, as you see it, kind of short and sweet. It's just about opting in. Those are things that, you know, would love to work with you on that. But right now we're trying to get it like other states are doing so that we can keep those dollars here.
Representative Clardy.
Okay. And then Representative Green brought something up about would a school that basically discriminated against someone with disability, would they be able to qualify for this?
Is that your question, Representative Clardy, or you have more?
That's my question.
Representative Myers.
Yeah, I think another representative talked about it. I don't think we're here to discriminate against people. Schools aren't going to be discriminating against people, and that's the approach we want to take.
So just for a clear, thank you, Chair. Just for a clarification, so at this point, if someone applies for a school, then the school will be accepting them in order to get the funding? I'm just not clear, say, on that piece, with the disability piece. Big concern.
Representative Myers.
Yeah, and thank you for that. Again, this is going to go to what comes together from the federal perspective.
And Representative Myers, just I'm hearing a lot of things just so just to allow you to address these. First of all, on the fraud piece, which I think is a very fair question we make sure we ask, I know that the Department of Education has the IGA, the Inspector General, that we have funded. So it might be worth a conversation with Mr. Uni offline and get familiar with what we put in place here for that. So I think that is a fair concern. And the second thing is I just want you to be able to address the discrimination. You've brought a bill in front of us that would opt in for a federal program. I don't want to ask you the question of motives, but I want to allow you to be very clear on where you see this going and what your hopes are for what this bill would do and the children that it would reach.
Yeah, I mean, I think first, this bill doesn't address the enrollment process that we have, but I think I've said it before. I mean, this is another option, opportunity of where we're going to, you know, use the money that if we don't opt in to keep it in Minnesota, if we don't opt into this, the opportunity is gone. I don't know why we wouldn't want to do that, especially when 90%, and again, call it a 90-10 issue, 90% of our kids are going to a public school. This is, in my eyes, you know, for my friends, my neighbors, people in our community, our teachers, this is going to help public schools immensely.
Representative Myers, for the record, if this bill down the road or if this program, and you were to find out that there was intentional discrimination, would you still support it?
No, I would not.
Thank you. Representative Reimer and then Representative Bakeford.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Myers, for bringing this bill forward. I think it's been said before, but I just wanted to clarify, would this bill prevent an organization like Education Minnesota from setting up an SGO, should they so choose?
Representative Myers?
Yeah, I don't believe it would.
Representative Reimer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then a follow-up question. Did you personally call President Trump to orchestrate how this tax credit would work?
Representative Meyer.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, I thought so. Thank you, Mr.
Representative
Chair. Thank you, Representative Myers. And, you know, my predecessor, Ann New Brindley, said pretty often, got known for it, that this is bonkers. And this is bonkers, what I'm hearing today, because this is the framework by which we operate by. I hear and I've heard a lot of navel-gazing about, I wish the federal government did it this way. I wish the federal government would prioritize this. Well, none of us have, to my knowledge, President Trump's phone number to give him a call and say, hey, I wish it would have worked. This is the state-level framework by which we have to work off of to get money not only into public schools, but any child who needs it. Right now, we are putting children in this political battle that we're trying to have that we have no control over. It's been said multiple times that this money is going out anyway. So why would we not take advantage of it? And then I've heard a number of times this almost soft bigotry of low expectations that our public schools cannot compete for these dollars. Well, just in this very committee, tell that to my teacher apprenticeship program in North Branch, which was spearheaded by Representative Clardy and Representative Mueller, that they have spun up a teacher apprenticeship program that is remarkable. And tell that to the kids who do the door knocking with Domino's cards to raise program funds for their wrestling team. This idea that public schools cannot compete or that somehow private schools are going to monopolize this process, I don't believe it. Because I've seen plenty of organization from our public schools, even at this Capitol. The last thing I'll say is that in Forest Lake, we have Lakes International Language Academy, and a lot of my constituents' kids go to that school, and it's a wonderful school. I think a few of you are familiar with it. And I think it needs to be said that these charter schools are also public schools, but they don't have levy authority. So what could money, if they choose to get organized, spin up an SGO, what difference could this money make in a situation like that where we're talking about property poor districts, we're talking about no levy authority, we're talking about still public school support for these children? This is a critical moment, and I think people look at us down at the Capitol and are oftentimes like, why can't you guys do common sense things? And what could be more common sense than this to say the money's getting spent anyway? We should have a piece of that pie. That money should not be sent to Colorado. That money should not be sent to Virginia. That money should stay here. I agree with a lot of the comments that have been made before that either collectively we're misunderstanding this bill or there's been misrepresentation. But to me, this seems like, unless you have Representative Myers, Donald Trump's phone number, we can call him right now, this seems like the common sense thing to do. Thank you.
Representative Myers, for the testimony, do you have President Trump's phone number?
Absolutely not.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Representative Reimer. Representative Bakeberg, and then Chair Joaquin.
Oh, I have a lot of thoughts about this. Just want to clarify a few things for the record. And actually, Representative Reimer stole my thunder. So just a couple clarifications. This is not a voucher program. So for anyone to say that is just wrong. It's just wrong. This is not a voucher program. So for those of you that said that and you were given information, you were lied to. This is not a voucher program. We also heard that the Constitution says that we can't fund non-public schools. That is also wrong. Actually, under the trifecta, we provided universal meals funding to our non-public schools. So if we want to have that, actually, Representative Myers brought a bill to reprioritize funding for wealthy families to be able to go to local option revenue, safe schools, multiple areas. So if we want to talk about the constitutionality of things, let's start with universal meals. We also provide funding for nursing services, for counseling services at our non-public schools. Mr. Beckering testified with some of the proposals that were being offered last year, pushed by the governor, was to eliminate funding for non-public schools. His employees that work at his school, our Education Minnesota members, they would have lost their job if that cut went through. So make no mistake that It is constitutional to provide funding to our non-public schools. Wendell Anderson was the governor who started it. Obviously, it wouldn't pass now, but at a time when we could actually work together to roll up our sleeves and solve problems, Wendell Anderson led that charge to provide that. Now I want to talk about the actual bill, what this bill actually does. These are Minnesota tax dollars that our Minnesota constituents have sent to the federal government. We have the opportunity to say, you know what? We want that $1,700 back in Minnesota. Do some math, people. I think it was about, there's about 3 million taxpayers in Minnesota. Not everyone would qualify. Multiply that out, $5 billion. Yesterday, I met with superintendents from my district. Do you know what the number one thing that they talked about was? The Blue Ribbon Commission. They are petrified of what is coming for that cut in the Blue Ribbon Commission. One of the proposals is to cut ADCESS funding. Do you know what ADCESS funding provides? Pre-referral services for special ed. It's trying to avoid people, kids qualifying for special ed services. So one of the proposals that the Blue Ribbon Commission has is to cut the services that are trying to keep people out of special ed. That is just a terrible idea. That's the nicest way I can say it. If 5% of people take advantage, 150,000 taxpayers across Minnesota take advantage of this, if the governor chooses to opt in, because the only reason he had this bill is because the governor won't opt into this. He could do this right now, just like he could declare a calamity, and we could address what has been happening with our declining enrollment in schools. But he hasn't done that either yet. But if 150,000 taxpayers opt into this, it's $250 million. That takes care of the Blue Ribbon Commission. So we have a choice. We can either opt in and take advantage of the dollars, or we can say no, and I will donate my $1,700 tax credit to the Democrat governor, to an SGO in Colorado, the Democrat governor that just opted in. I'll donate it to Colorado because I have a cousin that lives in Colorado. Think through that, folks. Think through that. And here's the bottom line. And this is what Representative Reimer stole my thunder. I will put Shakopee schools against any non-public school. I will put Prior Lake Savage schools against any non-public school. I will put Jordan schools against any non-public school. We actually compete with Mr. Beckering's school for kids. And you know what happens? Competition is good. So a couple years ago in the community that I serve in as a principal, the middle school at the non-public, they established a middle school, and it was awesome, because it made us sharpen our saw and get better in my middle school. And more of those kids are coming to the school that I serve in because we provide excellent service for our kids. And for anyone to use Representative Reimer's term, the soft bigotry of low expectations, knock it off. Believe in our public schools. We should pass this today. Or if we're going to lay it out, let's lay it over. Let's talk more about it. We need to pass this bill, and let's believe in our public schools, because 90% of our kids attend public schools. 90%. And I believe in our public schools. Right when COVID happened, it was a Sunday afternoon. We transformed our education system in the school that I served in on a Sunday afternoon. And there's a lot of things we would do differently today. But that same thing can happen if we allow our schools, and we will see a windfall of money into our schools. And to my school group colleagues over there, I'd love to chat with you about the potential that our schools have. Let's believe in our schools and let's turn them loose. Thank you, Representative Myers, for consistently bringing ideas and solutions, not just as talking points, but actual opportunities to make our public schools better. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bakeberg. Chair Youakim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a few clarifying things here. These vouchers cannot be used to fill a gap in special education funding. These are vouchers for individual students. So to say that this could make up the dollars for the Blue Ribbon Commission, which, by the way, I did not like doing either, and we are looking at how we can fix that, that cannot do that. And ADSIS, I know, is very important, and I think what the Blue Ribbon Commission is talking about is just pulling that out of the special ed column and putting it in K through 12 where it belongs. But other than that, I just want to say we've heard a lot of sound bites today, and sometimes with sound bites we forget about the kids that we're serving. We are constitutionally mandated to have a form of public education. That is what we're tasked to do, and we're tasked to fund it. That is hard to do sometimes when you have 20 years of underfunding. And while we made a lot of improvements in 23, 24, we're not there yet. There is some soft bigotry here because we had public school teachers testifying. They were called liars. Their motives were impugned when what they care about is serving our kids. As Representative Senator Murrow pointed out in your packet, we have the organizations from all over the state that are tasked with serving our students, saying, quote, the program effectively functions as a national voucher system by directing federal tax incentives towards private education where there's no transparency, accountability, and public oversight required of public schools. Members, this is a voucher program dressed up to look nice. And we have to really consider what we're doing here. And Representative Myers, Senator Mura answered the question I was going to ask you about 300% of AMI. And since I don't like gotcha questions anyway, I'll just remind people, for two parents and two kids, that's over $372,000. That's the income gap. That's the income cap on what this program looks like. This is a program that's being built. Currently, we have no clear guidance. We have some lists of items. And I really get concerned about opting into something where we don't know exactly what we're doing. I worry about the guidance over SGOs. It is clear from the little bit of guidance we've gotten, that whoever opts us into an SGO cannot tell an SGO no and cannot stop an SGO from functioning if they're not living up to what that guidance is. That is just ripe for fraud. I'm happy that we had this full discussion, but I get really concerned when I see press conferences, and maybe this is my question to you then, Representative Myers. I was really concerned in the press conference to hear that public school funding coming out of this session will be held hostage if this bill isn't passed. Representative Myers, is that what you believe?
Representative Myers.
Thank you, Chair Youakim. I can only talk about the bill I'm carrying, my actions, my words. It sounds like you watched the press conference. I think you saw my words and my actions, and you know, we've had enough conversations. You've seen the bills that I've carried. I'm going to continue to support every kid, every teacher, and you know, the students that we have.
Thank you, Representative Myers. Was that a yes or a no?
It's a no.
Thank you, Representative Myers. Representative Kreisha, thank you for giving us the latitude to really have a deep down discussion about this. I would hope that some of the vitriol for our public school teachers and our public school systems gets a little calmed down in this committee, since we are tasked to fund them. And I think they are creative, and I think they do the best that they can with the money we give them. We need to be helping work together to make sure that they're sustainable, since 90% of our students go to public schools. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Joachim. And so, members, a couple closing comments and clarification things. First of all, yes, I wanted to let the passion go out. I think passion leads to possibilities. As I heard in Ways and Means from Representative Frazier, sometimes partisanship shows up in the committees, but it's outside the committees that we start to work on how we resolve conflict and go to compromise. I have full confidence, Representative Meyer, that you'll work on taking us down that path. Members, we've had a good discussion today. Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Myers, to your bill, then I'll close.
Yeah. Thank you, everybody, for the discussion. I want to thank all the testifiers that showed up. I mean, it's really important to me. I made a lot of phone calls before having this bill hearing because it's about listening to the boots on the ground and the options and opportunities that we can present. You know, this committee is tasked with some very tough choices. The cuts of over $400 million, the special education that's going to be impacted. And just even recently, you know, AMSD just came out and they're $220 million worth of shortfalls. I mean, these are real numbers. We need opportunities, innovative solutions. And it's not just one bill, one idea that's going to get us there, but this is one bill for you guys to consider. Again, my hope is that we can put politics aside because I think everybody in this room, testifiers, everyone, we have a shared goal. And that shared goal is to support our Minnesota schools, our students, and our educators.
Thank you, Representative Myers. And so with that, members, I see this as a yes and bill. This is an opportunity, an educational opportunity. I really do. And I think there's room for that. We've had good discussion, and this will benefit students across the state, public, private, tribal. If an SGOs are set up, there are creative ways to get there. And members, I intentionally, rather than pushing us into a corner, chose not to call for a vote on this. There will be a vote on this. We will have a vote on this before third deadline. But my hope was that we could take this to a point of conversation. My hope, honestly, is that the governor would simply opt in and we could take it off the table. If the comments were misconstrued in a way in the press conference that the educational budget is being held hostage, my comments were not that. My comments are no different than we heard from the Department of Education. If the Department of Education, in the echoes of the words of the governor, is we're not opting in, then my message is very similar. I'm not moving forward with other solutions until this is done. It's take it off the plate. I don't want to go to this analogy, but it feels like some of the early days when I had disagreements with certain family members that were younger and smaller than me, as they would slam the door. Well, the governor has slammed the door in the hallway, and I'm standing outside saying, Governor, just take this off the table. Just opt in, allow for these dollars to stay in Minnesota, and then let's look at how we can solve the compensatory problem. Let's look at how we're going to solve the special ed. Let's stay away from the ADSIS funding. Let's go to all of the mandate relief that we need to. We can go through that whole list. I'm just asking the governor, which obviously, let's not make this the bargaining chip. Take this off the table. You can do that. So my intention is not to hold the educational bill hard, educational funding hostage. I'm one member of 134. My comments are I won't take a step forward until the governor does a yes and with us on that. So members, as I said, this bill will come back up for a vote. If we can't get there, I would hope that's done. And I want to thank everybody for the discussion. I say this with the utmost sincerity and authenticity as I can. I believe in the comments of this committee. I believe in the people, and I believe there are places to go. Take that opportunity. So with that, members, we are going to go to adjournment. Before we do that, we're going to lay the bill over. So House File 3490 is laid over as amended. And with that, before I go to adjournment, Chair Joachim, you have some comments, and then also if you want to give us a preview of Thursday.
Absolutely. I just wanted to also do a quick clarification and thank Representative Kreisha for his partnership on this. We took non-public private aid off the table long in the beginning of negotiations. So when you say that we wanted to cut non-public people aid, not you, other people, that was a governor's proposal. It was not entertained by our side of the table. But for next week, some people will be really exciting because we're actually talking about local optional revenue and what we can do to equalize those school funding. We also have a few other levy bills from members, and then we'll start the discussion on special education bill backs. So look forward to scintillating conversation.
And thank you. Chair Joachim, I want to take that opening for what it was worth. We sat in committees. We made sure outside of this committee we did not vote for cuts, and that was in cooperation with both sides. Chair Uakim has been a good faith partner. We held firm on the public education. We held firm on transportation and student support services. Members, there is more common here than there is conflict. And so I thank you for that. I look forward to Thursday's hearing. With that, members, we are adjourned.